Who do you say that I am? And what difference does it make anyway? Those nice ripe grapes that were hanging there in the Aesop's fable were a little bit like being part of Jesus' entourage. As Jesus went from village to village, he gained more and more notoriety. And so people, of course, wanted to be with him. Some people even said that they needed him. Some people said that they loved him. People wanted to be in his presence. Sometimes if they needed healing of one sort or another, or maybe just to hang with him. So the disciples knew that this enterprise that was developing around them, that was gaining momentum, was something of which they wanted to be a part. And they had already been chosen, of course, by Jesus himself. But as the whole thing started gathering more momentum, they were discussing amongst themselves how this would all shake out for them. How will this go down for me? Who will be the greatest among us? Who will be the first? Who will be Jesus' favorite? They likely were even dreaming of things like economic security, political power, influence, control. Isn't that what this life is all about? And so Jesus said to them at one point in their walk from village to village, "Who does everybody say that I am? Who do the people say that I am?" And they said, "Oh, that you're a great prophet, that you're an effective leader that we can get behind, someone who's going to take us places, somebody who's going to help us realize all of those things that live within us." But then Jesus says, "But who do you say that I am?" And Peter, good old unabashed, sometimes unfiltered Peter, utters out loud these words, "You are the Messiah." A fairly bold statement. Someone for whom the Jews had been waiting for thousands of years. This may be the first time that it was said out loud in mixed company, but it was loud enough for all of the disciples to hear. They may well have been discussing it amongst themselves quietly, but Peter changed things by saying it out loud. Now, this idea of the Messiah, as it had developed over thousands of years for the Jews, was also shaped by the political realities of that day. This Jesus is going to lead us to political success. He's going to help us free ourselves from the oppression of the Roman tyrants. We will no longer be the conquered, but we may even think of ourselves as the conquerors. We will no longer have to bow down to Rome. Who knows? Maybe Jesus will turn the tables to the extent that Rome will bow down to us. And won't that feel very sweet? We might even have the freedom of developing ourselves economically so that we can enjoy our independence with a better standard of living. And of course, these ideas that people had developed about what it meant for the Messiah to come, these ideas were not just a first century phenomenon, even in our day to day. There are proselytizers of the Christian gospel that portray following Jesus as the way to sugar and spice and everything nice, a way of seeing all of our dreams come true, maybe even economic security and prosperity and enjoyment of the finer things in life. Some of us have heard of the prosperity gospel. So Peter is not alone. There are still some people that hope for that in coming to follow Jesus today. But then in the gospel reading for today comes the pail of cold water over the head. Jesus taught Peter and the disciples that the Messiah must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders and the priests and be killed, but after 3 days, to rise again. Peter was not having it. Peter was not in the market of any kind of God-given miraculous event. He told Jesus to knock off the crazy talk. You're going to scare the chickens. But Jesus, in one of his most harsh moments in the Gospels, rebukes Peter, one of his loved ones, for thinking of earthly outcomes instead of heavenly ones. Jesus tried to teach Peter and the disciples about his suffering, his death, his resurrection, but they had no frame of reference to be able to process this. There had not yet been any Holy Week or Easter. But then Jesus, in our gospel reading for today, turns the entire operation upside down, not only for the disciples, but for the crowds that were following him. Jesus turns to the crowd and, in the hearing of the disciples, tells them that the only way to follow him is to deny yourself, take up your cross, and to follow him. If you try to save your life, you will lose it. If you lose your life for the sake of the gospel and for my sake, says Jesus, you will gain it. There are some commentators that say that this was an important turning point in Jesus' ministry. One writer says, with this ominous invitation, the cost of discipleship got much, much bigger. Embracing Jesus means embracing the cross. And Mark doesn't say it in his gospel, but some commentators suspect that after these words, the crowds around Jesus became much smaller. This whole business of denying ourselves, taking up our cross, and following Jesus is meant for us to let go of our own expectations as to where our Christian walk will lead us. If you had asked me as a young Christian where my commitment to Jesus was going to lead me, I can guarantee you there's no way I could have predicted all the places I would go and all the ministries to which I would be called along the way. I couldn't have predicted the person I would become by denying myself and taking up my cross and following him. But here I am today, still doing it and hopefully making an impact in bringing the healing presence of Jesus to the world around me. And here you are, doing it too, every day, getting up, knowing that if we want to follow Jesus, and we say that we do, that we have to deny ourselves and take up our cross and follow him. Follow him into a life of service and suffering. Follow him into his suffering and death, knowing that our comfort is the promise of the resurrection that will come afterward. So who is this Jesus? Who do you say that he is? Do you dare to deny yourself and take up your cross and follow him? Do you dare to leave aside your prejudices, your presuppositions, your weaknesses, and to draw on his strength to follow him, to serve others? What I can tell you is that you will never do it alone. And that's one of the big comforts that I find in being a Christian, in knowing that when I deny myself, take up my cross, and follow him, there are plenty of other people that are doing it every day of their lives. Never alone. Do you dare? Go for it. You will never be alone. Amen.